Welcome to Friday Night Party Line, episode 69 with Nelson.
Ahoy, hoy.
Ahoy, hoy to you, Nelson. And David, who is obfuscated his face.
Nah, there, I'm back now.
There he is. There's David. Oh, where's David? There's David. And Tribba should be joining us in a fairly short amount of time. But in the meantime, how you guys doing this month? Having a good old time? Oh, wait, hold on a second. I always forget this. Always forget this. And I'm your host. If I can shut this off. What happened here? Oh, no, it's not working. Ah, here we go.
Aha,
here we go.
There he is.
And
that might have been the shortest time until we did a gag in any episode we've
well,
done.
I mean, it's only really a gag if it was intentional, but and I'm your
it was intentional
it was completely unintentional and I'm your host Victor Frost. So guys, how are we doing this month?
We both got jobs this month, right?
Yeah, we both got jobs this month. Doing pretty well.
Woohoo!
Jobs.
Employment.
Jobs and art. It's good.
I am hopefully going to be getting a job at a radio station in fairly short amount of time. A paying job, not just an unpaid internship. So here's hoping.
Nice.
Yeah, here's hoping. And well, I mean, we're trying to get the usual amount. Ah, Tribba just came online. So he'll be in here momentarily. But yeah, a lot of our friends are over at we're at PAX Australia, and that was fun. And Trevor should be able to regale us with a tale of that, because he too was at PAX Australia, and I hear tell that he met one of you awesome Friday Night Party Line listeners out there, and had an awesome time.
Ooh.
Out.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Wait,
ooh.
Wait, he met our one listener?
Yeah, one guy. But there's still a show to be done, so let's move on. Let's get going with this month's topics. And Turbo will come in and we'll brief him on what we're talking about when he gets here. So we talked a couple months ago about how educational television shapes the world. And now Cosmos, the fantastic show done by great astronomer Carl Sagan, is coming back to the small screen, but not the old 1980s version. We are getting the awesome new version that is going to be put out, featuring acclaimed astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson and Seth MacFarlane? Yeah, you heard right. Seth MacFarlane, the man of Family Guy and, you know, all the other various spin-offs fame. The trailer presented at Comic-Con looks really promising, but will this new incarnation really have the same impact the original had? What'd you think, David?
Well, you know, I mean, like, I studied a science in college. I think science, you know, the nice thing about it is that it's all based in facts. So if you're talking about the wonders of the universe, it doesn't really matter who's presenting it or who's producing it.
Oh, come on.
So it could be Carl Sagan. No, I don't think so at all. You know, science and the astronomy Cosmos deals with, the stuff that they want to address with that show, is the same no matter who's presenting it.
Oh, it's no. Really. Okay, look, but here's the thing, David. There's a difference between who is presenting it. I mean, you can have, you know, God, what was his name? Ben Stein presenting it, and it won't be nearly as entertaining than if Neil deGrasse Tyson presented it, because Neil deGrasse Tyson has this really charismatic personality that Ben Stein just doesn't have. For example.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you want someone like Bill Nye or Michio Kaku to present a science television program. You want someone who's both charismatic and actually cares about the material. That's important. But, I don't know. Seth MacFarlane is just, he's just producing. If you're producing a science show, you're not really going to have any impact on the direction. What's there to impact when you're just presenting facts?
Well, Seth MacFarlane isn't presenting. Neil deGrasse Tyson
I mean, he's the executive producer, though.
Right, but Well, I mean, an executive producer has a tremendous amount of impact of a direction of a show.
From the trailer that I saw, I think it will have more explosions and more visual effects than the original did. I think, though, that Neil deGrasse Tyson has stepped up into the mantle of the, you know, popular scientific fellow that Carl Sagan used to have. I think he's trying to be, not be Carl Sagan, but have the same kind of cultural niche. Yeah, the cultural impact that he has.
Which is good. I mean,
yeah,
I'm all in favor of that.
He's bringing science to the masses.
Yeah, it's something important that we've been missing for a really long time. I mean, say what you will about Bill Nye and his impact on people our age, but the fact of the matter is that was a kids show, and aside from Cosmos and, like, maybe some episodes of Nova, we haven't really had anyone presenting science to the public in a digestible manner in a good few years.
Mythbusters.
I wouldn't call that science. You know, it's like, it's debunking stuff, and they're doing it in an experimental manner, but they're not teaching you anything about the world.
What is that the zombie, I can't remember his name.
Picture. Zombies aren't real.
No, picture. Hold on. In the XKCD comic, zombie, oh man, I can't. Richard Feynman.
Zombie Richard Feynman. He says that it's good that we have the Mythbusters there to get people thinking critically about how the scientific method can be used to solve problems, and I agree with that. But at the same time, you know, the stuff that Mythbusters are doing, it doesn't really give you any sort of big picture view of how the world around you works. Like, you know that you could probably lift a lead balloon if it was big enough and you had enough helium. That's a cool fact to know, but does it tell you anything about our universe? Not a whole lot.
Well, yeah,
also,
it does.
Also, the fact that Cosmos, the original Cosmos, it's the primary reason why it is so successful and popular is because it astounded people with the majesty of the natural world.
Exactly.
Like, that is its, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Like, the poetry and the monologues in there were brilliant. And they really kind of, like, a lot of people say, oh, you know, I got into science because I watched Cosmos and I was fucking astounded by, you know, the majesty.
The majesty of the cosmos with the billions and billions of stars.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you may have heard that slight ping in the background, and that is because Chirba has joined us. Chirba, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. We are talking about the first topic. We actually just started a couple minutes ago, so you are you're more or less on the key here.
More or less on time, yes. That's how I roll.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, we did start the show a little bit earlier than scheduled, but it's all good. So, Chirba, what do you think?
About?
We were talking about whether or not the new Cosmos produced by, done by Neil deGrasse Tyson and Seth MacFarlane would have the same sort of cultural impact as the old Cosmos done by Carl Sagan.
Well, it's really hard to say because, well, most of us, we've watched Cosmos as we were much younger and it's influenced us greatly. And the people who this is generally aimed at are not just fans of the old Cosmos, but people who haven't seen that before and don't have a point of reference for that. For them, this may be exactly as Carl Sagan's Cosmos, because they've never had that experience from a show called Cosmos before. But, you know, how can we tell if this is the case or not, since obviously we're not part of that group?
And
you
it
can't
hasn't
put
happened
the genie
yet
back
for
in the bottle there.
Right. I mean, I'm just hoping that it is. I mean, it, like, like Nelson said, I mean, it was the thing about Cosmos is that it has introduced the masses to the majesty of space and space exploration. And I think with a lot of people considering NASA, I mean, obviously NASA has done a lot in the last few years to increase its public awareness. I mean, we had the Curiosity landing, we had, you know, so many of the other space-type missions being a matter of major news and, you know, cultural importance, you know, especially with the streaming options now on YouTube. People have watched a lot of these kinds of things on YouTube. I'm hoping that it does help bring a greater awareness to the mass public about the importance of space exploration and scientific awesomeness that is the world and the universe.
I mean, I honestly think that no matter who's presenting the information or the charisma, the true star of Cosmos is the cosmos. It's like a nature documentary. You know, I don't really care if David Attenborough is talking about the wonders of nature in the background. I care about the amazing things I'm seeing on screen.
I don't know.
We have a pair of penguins slowly progressing towards the area where they will finally build their nest. In which they will probably have a shag.
And in the glorious world that is planet Earth's natural ecosystem, the penguins continue a millennia-long cycle of evolution and procreation, continuing the lineage of their natural ancestors before.
Billions, I think, if anything, and billions of penguins.
Billions, billions.
A large problem with specifically Americans' perceptions of science, not just, you know, not understanding the scientific process and, you know, experimentation and stuff, but also not really understanding the time scales. Like, a lot of people can't really put their minds around, you know, geologic time scales. So, you know, when we're bemoaning the fact that something like a large percentage of Americans don't believe in evolution, a lot of that, I think, is that it's really, you know, if someone just says, hey, you came from a monkey, obviously that makes no sense.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
To fully grasp an idea like evolution, you have to realize exactly how gradual and how slowly these processes happen. And I think that, you know, Cosmos and actually the Powers of 10 video, which you probably saw in like high school or middle school, which I think is actually a pretty interesting video.
I have no recollection of that name, but I will look it up.
Basically, yeah, it goes through scale of like from atoms to the universe, you know, in this like zooming out box and like boxes within boxes. Just to like show you the scale of all these natural phenomena. And I think that something like that for time, and Cosmos, the original Cosmos did this a bit, I believe. That's really important.
Hmm.
Like when you say, you know, a million years.
How do you even grasp that?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, all of recorded human history has been what, at most 10,000 years, 13,000 years. I mean, I'm no historian, but it is not even close to a million.
Yeah, was the calendar metaphor originally in Cosmos, or does that predate it?
Oh, it's been so long since I've watched Cosmos, I have no idea.
Yeah, because they have a scale, they use this calendar as a metaphor, and they're like, you know, this in the first of the month is when the universe began, and then in the like 28th of the month is when the sun, you know, formed and all that stuff.
And that really shows you,
like, it's a really accessible metaphor. I think that's, if the new Cosmos can have accessible metaphors like that, it will do well.
I agree.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yes.
Why? I'd light up my pipe.
Yep, my brain's still catching up at the moment, so it's all good.
Sorry, Turbo, we'll let you feel free to contribute whenever you feel you have something to contribute. We will let your brain continue to boot up since it is still the morning for you.
Oh, yes, very much so.
Yeah.
And also a bit of the PAX POX has laid me
Well, speaking of, like I said into the beginning of the show, Chirba was at PAX Australia. And Chirba, I believe you had a run-in with a Friday Night Party Line listener?
A few, in fact. I was managing Wombat Theatre, so I was standing in one place quite a lot of time. And every once in a while, someone would come by and just be like, oh, hey. It's Chirba. Hey, Chirba, how are you? You know, how you doing? Just, you know, have a quick chat and then move on. And nice. We had one listener who I actually met up with when we were going out with for drinks with some other podcasters we know, Riv and Scott and a few other people from the forums. We were heading out on Sunday and they came along and they were all excellent. They got to hear me doing what I apparently do best, which is get drunk and talk shit. So...
Maybe next PAX.
All pretty cool people. Glad to meet every single one of you. You were all excellent, all very polite, and very pretty.
Oh. Okay. Sweet.
So, yeah.
Do you remember...
Pleasure to see you again next year.
Do you remember any of their names?
I've got one on the tip of my tongue and it's going to kill me now, you bastard.
the burden of celebrity.
No, I'm just not good with names.
we'll let Chirba ruminate on that for a little while we move on to the next topic. Nelson actually submitted a topic for this episode. Very good, and I didn't even think of it. I'm really excited to talk about it. So, Nelson, since you submitted it for our consideration, why don't you give us the intro?
So, there's a man, a singular man named Elon Musk, and he was involved with, I believe, PayPal in the early days, and gained a lot of money from it.
Also Tesla.
And he, instead of using his money to cure cancer or, you know, pave roads or, you know, do, you know, boring humanitarian stuff, which is good, but also boring, he decided that he would be a non-asshole-ish Tony Stark. And he would make all the awesome future stuff happen in the present. So he is involved in things like SpaceX, he is involved in Tesla Motors, and he is also involved in a new venture known as Hyperloop.
I love the name. This is one of my favorite things.
Yeah. So basically, there has been this idea that we have trains, right? And civilized countries have maglev trains and high-speed rail and things like that. Well... there's an idea that if you can make a train go very fast by taking away all the impediments to going very fast, namely air.
Air.
So there is a thing called a evacuated tube transport, which is in a lot of sci-fi, and apparently it is actually possible to build with our current technologies. So the idea is we have tubes, enclosed tubes with, like, doors that let air not go in places. What are they called?
That's right.
Airtight doors, maybe?
Yes.
Like airlocks. They're like airlocks.
Yeah, airlocks. These tubes. And you can run a train, and not only are you running these tubes across the United States, and they're kind of expensive to build, but... apparently they're very cheap to operate. They, instead of switching like regular trains do, they actually use algorithms that are more akin to how cars work. So instead of a long train with, you know, hundreds of people on it, you have small six-man capsules that automatically route through the whole train network.
Ah.
And can go very, very fast. It was proposed, I believe, 4,000 miles an hour was the estimated top speed. And I was skeptical because that seems very fast for something on, you know, the ground level to do, even in near vacuum. And I was worried, like, how would you get up to that top speed without crushing your humans to a pulp? Well, through a perusal of the documentation on the Hyperloop's website, I found out the maximum gravity, like horizontal gravities, to achieve those speeds and those times, which are, I believe, 20 minutes from San Francisco to LA and about an hour from San Francisco to New York. Let me say that again, an hour from San Francisco to New York, the amount of acceleration you need is only 1G.
What? That's pretty excellent. So it's doable,
so
theoretically.
It's very doable. And they're investing in it, and they want to set up a test track to test it out by 2015. And then they want to, you know, wire up the United States and then the world with awesome, super fast space trains.
If they can do it, it's going to be amazing. But the problem I see is, like, how do you keep a tube that big at near vacuum for a long period of time?
Basically,
I don't know.
Pumps.
Lots of
pumps.
Yeah,
but
really good sealants.
Hopefully redundancy is going to be an issue, but I wonder how they'll figure it out, if they'll have like barrels that can rotate to other tubes. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure it'll have some amount of fail-safe-y type stuff. But before we go on any more on this topic, we have a fantastic guest that had some free time, so she's on the show. Veteran Friday Night Party Line listeners would know her well. We have Viga, Victoria Gadsden. Hey, Viga, what's going on?
That's cool.
Hey,
oh, hey.
What up?
There she is.
Hey, Vigs.
Yep, just came off being on another podcast, We Are the Geek, on Uncle Yo's show.
Yep.
Victor sent me a Skype saying, hey, we're doing this. I'm like, why not? Let's do this.
Yep, Viga is is quite awesome. So is Uncle Yo. I got a chance to meet him at Anime Expo this past year. So, yeah, just extended a happy invitation for her to come on to the show. So, Viga, we're talking about the awesome Hyperloop transport system that Elon Musk and his comrades are proposing to build for the United States.
Yeah,
make him sound like a communist.
And one, we really do need a better train infrastructure. It would create jobs, but unfortunately, we have a lot of things trying to eliminate that or keep that back. You know, politics and such. And this looks like a toilet paper tube.
It kind of does look like a toilet paper
tube. A little
bit, tube.
Yeah.
One cool thing I saw, apparently the price per mile after you get everything set up is about 10 cents, which is very, very cheap, and could hypothetically fund a person's trip solely through advertising.
Huh.
Which, on one hand, you know, no one likes advertising, but on the other hand,
free transportation.
Transportation across the United States.
You know, it's also a pretty viable strategy right now. I mean, it's like the shittiest airline on the planet, but Ryanair in Europe, most of the reason you can get a trip from somewhere like England to Spain for £20 is because they run advertisements all over the cabin space. And, you know, it's an eyesore, but again, if you can get your travel cheap by having ads shoved in your face, who cares?
Right.
Yeah,
I'll sacrifice my eyes just to get somewhere a bit cheaper. I mean, come on, we got to travel to cons somehow.
This is true. This is true. Well, I've actually been invited to a few conventions, but I've just been like, I can't go. I can't get there reasonably, so.
Yeah, I was going to go to a convention recently in a place kind of far away from me, but I could not go because it was too goddamn expensive.
Yep.
Australia.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it's okay. We got Easton.
Oh, Chirbel, you bastard. Visual gag number two for the show. Chirbel holds up his PAX Australia t-shirt. Goddamn.
Which probably still smells kind of funky because I wore this on the trip home, so it's probably still travel funky. I just can't smell anything right now, so I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think about with regards to this hyperspeed hyperloop transport. You got to think about how it would create opportunities for employment in places you otherwise wouldn't be able to reach, like commuting and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does it say? I mean, I know it had a list of here how long it would take to go from, like, San Francisco to Los Angeles, but...
20 minutes!
That's, like, how long it takes me to drive from my house to downtown L.A.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, other places have been doing similar things on a smaller scale for years. If they can do the Hypertube technology right, it just removes the effective distance between cities.
Right.
Yeah, imagine, instead of having, you know how, well, at least cities on the East Coast have the little local bus, like DC to New York or New York to Boston.
Yeah, like the Amtrak system, Amtrak, Greyhound, things like that.
Oh, yeah, I caught the tube to LA for lunch, and I was back in New York in time for dinner.
That sounds like the future. I want to live in that future.
Dude, if you've ever read in Larry Niven's Ringworld, there's a page worth of text about how there are teleporters and people just walk from time zone to time zone.
Well, I was about to say
4,000 miles an hour, you could effectively do that. You could live all in daylight or all in night or whatever you want.
Right.
That's true.
I was going to say this technology, if it comes to fruition, is one step away from teleporters.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it might be the closest we will ever get. But we're reaching the point where we're finding kind of neat ways to circumvent things that were previously considered to be, you know, was it Saturday Morning Breakfast cereal just ran this comic about how at one point there were people like, man is not meant to fly back when the airplane came out, but now men fly everywhere all the time. So who's to say that the hypertube isn't just the next step? There's probably going to be people who are saying, men were not meant to move from L.A. to New York.
You know what I really like about this? There's a lot of sci-fi about a similar idea, like evacuated tube transport through the center of the Earth. Like, I mean, the movie that was the remake of Blade Runner had that.
Which movie was that?
It was called Blade
Runner.
Are
you sure you know you mean the one that's actually a remake of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is Total Recall?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. Are they remaking Blade Runner? I think they are.
They probably are.
Blade Runner 2.
Anyway, but yeah.
They're making like the Smurfs of, you know, 2. If they're not making Blade Runner, I would just cry.
The idea of, you know, going through like a transport through the center of the Earth is pretty much impossible, at least with today's technology, right, and would cause some problems with magma. But this is like the second best thing.
Yeah, it's a little like every single day. I was telling Charger 42 about this the other day, but every day I look at my smartphone and I think about the fact that I have the totality of all human knowledge in the palm of my hand, and I can also use it to connect to any other human being on Earth. It's a little weird when you think about the implications, like, technologies that are simply everywhere have as compared to the science fiction we read when we were kids.
Right.
You know, the average smartphone and the Hypertube are more advanced than certain technologies that were in, like, the first generation of Star Trek. The average smartphone is more advanced than the tricorder and Earth hat monorails.
Pretty much, yep. We have all the cool stuff and none of the crazy fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's well, pretty accurate.
You know what? And I gotta, and I'm gonna take the opposite take on this, Hyperloop, you know, tube thing, and you know, bring up that, well, when you have truckers, you know, trucking heavy freight or large freight across the country, they support to a fair degree along these major highways the local economies of these otherwise flyover states. What's gonna happen to that?
Perfectly segues into a point I wanted to make. When I talked about switching stuff and how it was actually more akin to automated car systems and automated highways,
yeah,
the plan for Hypertube is to actually have rest stations and, you know, lots of exits, like highway exits, all along the tube. So because it's not a giant train that's transporting 100 people at a time, you can, you know, get on the tube, you know, every 15 minutes there's a little, like, place to get off and, you know, get a burger, or it can support a highway-like intermediary, you know, infrastructure of places to visit between the major cities, which I think is a really great idea.
So if you're, like, traveling along at 4,000 miles an hour and you all the people in your little tiny pod collectively think, you know what, maybe we should go get something to eat. I'm feeling peckish.
If there's a problem, one of the big things about, you know, their safety stuff is that if there's a problem, you know, and we need to, like, the tube ruptures or there's a terrorist attack or something, you just route all the cars around there to the nearest exit and just, like, you know, get them out of the tube there.
Yep.
It's, I don't know, I was just thinking about this when you said flyover states. There's this cool theory I was reading about the other day. They did some research, and I'm trying to find the article right now, but basically, a lot of urban planners think that the end term of city development is that you end up getting these big stripes of megacities across continents with big areas of agriculture in between them.
I think it's called an arcology or an oncology.
Arcologies, which were like the huge mega buildings, but generally, like, they talk about corridors and conurbations. And if you look at the United States, we actually, and continental Europe, I think, has them, and Australia definitely has one all the way down the coast, is that cities tend to gather into large stripes, these conurbations. So there's something like Hypertube to come along, which offers a way to directly attach these big megacities with limited travel in between them. You know, I think what we're going to start seeing is that the development of human society is going to start shifting more away from the suburban motor city ideal where you have interstates and commuter rail connecting things towards sort of super dense cities with big areas of just agricultural land in between them.
Huh? Oh, hey!
Pristine wilderness?
Yeah, basically just pristine wilderness. I mean, you already kind of see it because of the way that air routes work between big airport hub cities, but if you have something like Hypertube, the areas that are going to be necessary to support a human population are going to be smaller, so the wilderness is going to start retaking some of that unnecessary human development.
Like I just had this... Like,
yeah,
Detroit.
Like Detroit. It's actually happening in Detroit right now.
The natural reclamation. I just had this I just had this really interesting idea. So if this Hypertube system, which I'm completely going to stop even thinking what its actual name is anymore, if this Hypertube system becomes a real thing and these long distance traveling between these places becomes, you know, the default way people travel from one big city to another big city, what will happen to car culture? Will these big highways, like, for example, Route 66, suddenly become Autobahn? and people.
You know, it's a really valid question.
That's pretty doubtful, considering Route 66 hasn't been an official road for about 20 years.
I know, but you know, you can still get on "quote unquote" Route 66 and drive all the way to Santa Monica Pier. So
parts of it, some of it's torn up.
Yeah, it's true.
Actually, quite a lot of it, and some of it is like just backwoods, fucked
right.
up ass country road.
We were driving down Route 66, and we got to this town that we got off to you know sleep overnight at, and then eat, and it was such a desolate
town. Deal with the
necessaries. Yeah, the necessaries, and it was just such a desolate town. I can't even. And the food there was crap.
You saw the former glory, and it was gone.
Yeah, you know what? It was like a Ooh. Radiator Springs
yes.
place. So let's move on to the next topic, and I think I should have to ask you guys to forgive me a little bit on this one, because I'm gonna in the glory of the old Friday Night Party Line style, I'm going to be busting out into a Thade style rant. But it feels kind of right for this one. So drones are out there, and not government drones for once. Drones, in this case unmanned aerial vehicles, are becoming cheaper and easier to control, to the point that they are now consumer goods that you can just buy one at the mall. Most come equipped with cameras, some with sensors of some sort or another. Some can even stream live their view to your mobile phone. And that add that onto the growing community of hobbyists making their own drones, and you have the potential for the air to be buzzing with them in the near future. Planning ahead, the FAA is getting ready to sort out the rules and regs for drones come 2015. But in the meantime, drones have been getting some people concerned. A town in Colorado was considering putting out bounties for hunters to encourage them to shoot down drones. The FAA has, of course, told them to stop being stupid, but that is hardly an isolated case. There are just as many people worrying about the privacy implications of drones as they are people saying how cool they are. Where are we heading with regards to drones? Should drones really be treated differently than model planes and helicopters, which have for a long time had cameras attached to them?
Where are we heading? Well, into the skies with wee little cameras, I suppose.
I've got two things to say. The first thing is that there's a recent Cory Doctorow book that actually deals with this pretty well. It's the sequel to Little Brother. I believe it's called Homeland.
Yes, it is.
And there's a big protest in San Francisco, because obviously.
Right.
And the police actually, I believe they use an EMP or something similar to knock out all of the recording devices, because they're going to crack down on this protest. And the main character and his buddies actually have a small squad of drones that they put up into the air afterwards and capture the video of, you know, police brutality, and it becomes this huge plot point because, you know, the police are being pretty brutal. And it's an interesting way to kind of keep order. I mean, we talked about this with Google Glass, like the idea of democratic surveillance rather than state-sponsored surveillance. But I think this is another aspect of that. But the big thing that I wanted to talk about was privacy and reasonable expectations of it. Because as it currently stands, we don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy when being recorded in or from a public space. With, you know, a few exceptions, but...
I mean, right. I don't know about you guys, but the moment I walk out of the door of my apartment, the moment I leave the property that I've leased, I just assume I'm being recorded. Do you guys do the same? Because I feel like that's the logical assumption to make.
Well, I mean,
and I don't really care. It doesn't affect how I act, but I know that it's a possibility, and I do think about how I behave, and, like, I don't know. I would say I'm cognizant of the fact that I may be surveilled anywhere outside my front door, and that I am not certain yet about how I act as a result.
Well, I mean, there's there's a difference between being recorded, like on, for example, take England, on a state CCTV system, or if you're in a store on a store security camera. There's a difference between that kind of being recorded and being recorded that are by people that are going, OMGs, this is going on to YouTubes.
But that's legal. I think the problem is, like, right now we have fences in our backyards. Well, people who have backyards generally have fences because you have a reasonable expectation of privacy on your own in your yard if you're behind a fence, right?
Right.
But what happens when that two-dimensional, you know, set of laws dealing with privacy now has a third dimension to cope with?
Hmm.
That's I think, why people are weirded out about drones, because they really make it easy to go just above the fence, and you're still in a public space, you're in the public airspace. Do you have a reasonable expectation of privacy from above?
Okay, here's a question, though. What's, like, I assume that there are spy satellites that are capable of greater resolution than the satellites on Google Earth.
I cannot confirm or deny this.
Yes, there are, absolutely.
Yeah. I would assume that if the government wants to see me from space and has my GPS coordinates, which they could obtain illegally from my cell phone, that they'd be able to do that. As long as I wasn't on the subway, the government can see me walking down the street if they want to.
Right.
So then, fundamentally, what's the difference between a satellite doing that and an RC drone doing it? I don't really care.
About $400 million.
Yeah, a large amount of money, but if they're surveilling me from space, why do I care if they're surveilling me from somewhere slightly closer than space?
I think it's really the thing that unnerves people is the fact that they see it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a difference between a stationary camera that's stuck in a place, which you can easily avoid by just walking around, to something flying over you and recording you. Pretty much, it's because it's a new way of doing it, people are pretty much freaking out. Like, this thing is following me. Let's shoot it. And, yeah, it's pretty dumb to just go around shooting random things that don't belong to you.
Right.
But pretty much it's that level of pretty much alienness that's going into security.
It's one thing to know you're being watched. It's another thing to see what's watching you.
Exactly. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
See, but at the same time,
to go back to shooting. Sorry about that, Dave. To go back to shooting random things that you don't own with a shotgun and how stupid it is. That small town. That's basically what's called a protest law, where they're doing something to protest. You know, generally something federal government's doing, but they can't actually affect.
Right.
But the thing is that law, despite a lot of people. Cory Doctorow, fucking type, anti-spying types and so on and so forth. Despite how much they celebrated it and how much they were all joking about how they were going to move down there and get a shotgun. Yeah, I got bad news about that. If by some miracle you actually managed to shoot down any government surveillance drone...
You're fucked.
You're probably going to kill someone. Those things are the size of a light fucking aircraft.
And if you manage to not kill someone, you're pretty much in it for the government for however much that drone was worth. Am I wrong?
Which was not
cheap.
Yeah,
pretty much a heavy fine.
And of course, the other problem being that the law says you can't shoot at any drone that's over 1,000 feet, and the government doesn't use any drone that flies under, I think, 10 or 15,000 except in war zones deployed by soldiers. No. By the way, we have drones that are carried by fucking soldiers that they just toss in the air. And they're like, oh, yeah,
that is pretty awesome.
That's totally boss. And I said we, even though I'm not American, but still.
Well, you know that Australia is probably going to buy some of them.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. But here's
and
the thing.
See, the only thing that's going to come out of this law is some poor photographers and videographers are going to get their very expensive work equipment shot out of the sky by some fucking tinfoil hat redneck with a bit of birdshot.
I would not feel so bad if it was TMZ's drone that got shot out of the sky.
Yeah, I wouldn't feel bad.
Well,
yeah,
so
more Gorka, even if it's just a photographer strapped to a helicopter, fuck it.
So here's a question I have that comes up whenever I think about surveillance. Beyond your personal space, do you think we really have a right to privacy? once a year outside of the home, do you have any right to expect that something's hidden from anyone?
You have the right. You have the right to expect whatever the fuck you want. It's whether or not you're actually entitled to that privacy. Because here's the thing. You're walking into a public space. There's a reason it's called a public space. Now, at the same time, you can have this sort of... Everyone has a sort of sense of personal privacy. If you're sitting in a park bench somewhere and you're having a quiet conversation with someone, it's reasonable to expect that someone isn't listening to you with a telescopic microphone. At the same time, you are sitting in a public space. Mm-hmm. So...
What about... In the comic Transmetropolitan, and in other things, there are a lot of news drones that just kind of go everywhere and try to record things. And you mentioned TMZ and Gawker and stuff. Like, hack journalists will probably use things like this to kind of like get scoops on people or find stuff.
I think it's gonna happen. I honestly think Transmet is pretty prescient about this stuff, and I think that if there's a cheap way for someone to hunt news, they're gonna use it.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just tell you this, Nelson, and this may make you add something or to your opinion, but you guys know about the Parrot AR drone, right? The example of a consumer drone. They have two modules you can put into it. One is an extended battery, which allows the drone to fly for about an hour and a half. The other is a data logger module, which has a GPS unit built in, which means you can actually, and this is part of the advertised feature set, you could program a route, a GPS-controlled route, for the drone to take and, you know, record video the entire way and then come on back home.
What happens when you take that technology and you coincidentally go the same route as Michael Sheen is going? Is that an actor?
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen.
Michael Sheen is also an actor, but...
Yeah.
Also happens to be his father.
Yep.
Or, you know, where does the line be... Because, I mean... Paparazzi are going to use this technology. They're going to find a way to plant GPS or even just, you know, figure out where people are and have drones follow them.
Right.
Where is the line between the lack of privacy, expectation of privacy in a public space and, you know, harassment and stalking?
That's a good question.
Within 5 years, there will be a case where someone uses this technology in a kind of stalkery, harassy way, and it's...
I just wanted to see Robert Downey Jr.'s underparts.
Well, why wouldn't you? Magnificent undercarriage.
I mean, you could probably do it right now if you wanted to. If you had the savvy with a quad rotor and a little quad rotor that was, like, of decent enough quality and could fly outdoors, you could build yourself a little surveillance drone that hovered at street level, which is kind of freaky to think about. But again, I think that, you know, you mentioned democratic surveillance earlier, and I think there needs to be a middle ground between what's considered reasonable surveillance and what is not. So, like, stalking and stuff needs to, like, our legal definitions of these things need to be reevaluated in the context of the technology we use.
Right.
And I think that overall, the fact that everyone has a camera makes us as citizens safe.
Agreed.
Yeah. But I also think, like you mentioned about, you know, drones and spying on private citizens, that we're...
No one would ever do that.
Oh, yeah. No one. No one would ever do that. Not the NSA, certainly. I think that the definitions of certain crimes we have are not up to the same level as the technologies that can be used to perpetrate those crimes.
Right.
And I think it's a legal problem that's going to be increasingly in the public eye in years to come.
And then there's the added problem of the idea of airspace over property rights, which by and large for most people doesn't, you know, have any sort of impact, especially in suburbia where you have these one, maybe two-story houses. But here in the United States, at least, there is this idea in the, you know, aviation laws that any aircraft can fly as low as they want as long as they are, you know, 500 feet away from people and man-made houses and man-made structures. I mean, I can certainly see that there's going to be a greater amount of citizen enforcement of those laws, filing lawsuits, demanding investigations of these violations of their airspace. It seems like it's something that's definitely going to come a lot more into play.
I think maybe you might end up seeing something like Neil Stephenson describes in Snow Crash with the Burb Claves, where there are going to be large areas of the United States that have maybe, who knows, like this is pretty much all conjecture, but if you get to the point where the technology necessary to build a news drone exists, you're going to end up with areas that have zoned their airspace to prohibit things that can spy on their citizens or at least the occupants of the community.
Right.
And also going back to that idea of the density of cities increasing, I think that, you know, one of the few ways to avoid the sort of mass surveillance that people are worried about is to move into structures that house a lot of people and aren't easily navigated by these little spy robots. Mm. So
basically, we should all go live in structures, much like the walled city of Kowloon.
Hey, man, I don't know. The cyberpunks might have been right, dude.
To be fair, Kowloon Walled City and Chongqing Mansion are pretty cyberpunk.
This is true. Well, except for Kowloon Walled City, which is actually more destructo-punk, because it's a pile of fucking rubble now.
True. Guys, as soon as Hyperloop exists, we're just living in the cyberpunk future. We're already in the cyberpunk future.
I mean, Shadowrun Returns came out yesterday.
And you saw that that awesome DARPA arm prosthetic. Right?
I'm actually really... DARPA released another video from actually Boston Dynamics about their new robot.
Yeah, man, they completely revamped that thing. It looks awesome. Scary, but awesome.
Yeah, they got it down to 6 feet tall. I think it still has an external power supply.
No.
But they're still working on that. But it's pretty mobile.
Terminator. Like, RoboCop.
Yeah, RoboCop. You know, give it 5 years, that will probably have an enclosed power supply. Hopefully a nuclear one, because that would be awesome.
No!
Nuclear-powered robots!
That'd be terrible!
It's not even going to be nuclear. It's just going to be like a little graphene battery pack that fits into his shoulder and can power him for 200 years.
Yeah.
Man, DARPA video I watched recently was watching some hackers from DARPA. Basically, they're driving along in a Prius, and, you know, there's a journalist driving in the video, and these guys have their laptop open in the back, and they're just doing whatever the fuck they want to this Prius. Like, basically, oh yeah, you want to just disable your ability to hit the brakes? Yeah, sure, now the brake pedal doesn't work.
What?
You want to engage the reverse parking steering while you're doing 100 down the highway? Yep, we can do that.
Oh,
turn
shit.
Turn on the horn, turn on the lights, make the speedo or fuel gauge or any of the other gauges display whatever the hell they want. They can do pretty much anything they like short of just driving the thing.
Well, tying that back to Elon Musk, like quite a lot of the cars that are in production right now, quite a lot of all the vehicles in production right now are just computers with motors attached. It's not unique to the Prius that you can override and change massive parts of how the machinery works by fiddling around on the computer.
And with cars like the some of the Volvos, like some of the Volvos and the BMWs with that automatic parallel parking feature, you have a complete fly-by-wire system directly integrated into the car. There's no reason why you can't hack it and use it.
And meanwhile, I don't even have an OBD2 port.
Oh, man, I wish I had an OBD.
I don't even have a computer. My car would survive an EMP.
I gotta tell you, I saw this really cool stereo head unit made by, of all companies, Parrot, that runs Android.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah. So you get that, install the Torx app on it with a nice, with a, provided you have a car with a 2-DIN slot and OBDi2, you have like all of the awesome car sensor stuff. But anyways, let's end the show with a little bit of levity and talk about what's keeping us entertained. New favorite music, TV shows, or even books we've recently gotten into. I gotta tell you, I am kicking off this, and Nelson referred this to me just today. I'm looking forward to watching The Hebrew Hammer.
You've never seen The Hebrew Hammer?
I haven't seen it.
I showed him the trailer. It's amazing.
What is The Hebrew Hammer?
Fucking fantastic.
On Netflix?
It's like Jewish Dolomite.
Yeah, basically. Starring
Dynamite.
Adam Carolla.
Dynamite. I'm so looking forward to watching that. And in terms of music, I've gone a little bit mainstream. I'm really, really down with Bruno Mars's Treasure. It's like right up my alley, that song.
Music-wise, I'm basically just listening to Robopope on repeat.
Yes.
I've yet to listen to the glory that is Robopope.
That's a Christfuck song, isn't it?
It's actually the lyrics, I believe, are from Christfuck, but the music was actually done by our friend Luke Barrage.
Ah, yep, Luke has been on the podcast many a time before. I believe the last time he was on the show, he was talking about filling up a subway car with blood.
I think that Robo was the time before, but still,
his subway car is full of blood.
Yes.
In terms of written material, or I guess written and drawn material, I received a contract with God Trilogy from Scott Rubin for our Secret Santa, and I finally got around to reading it now that I'm out of school. For those of you who don't know who might be listening, the Contract with God Trilogy is a comic book by Will Eisner in which he tells the stories of these people who live in a tenement on 25 or 51 Dropsy Avenue in New York City. And by telling the stories of the people living in this apartment building, Will Eisner shares his philosophy about God and life in the city and just kind of basic humanity and the struggles of being a person day to day in the modern age. And Scott pitched it to me as the greatest book, the greatest comic book ever written. And
it's one of
the best.
I think
he might be right. It might be the best comic book I've ever read.
It's one of the top ones I've read at a library. I really need to own it myself. I mean, I love Eisner. Eisner is one of my like deities in terms of comic making.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just reading it in school library. I thought I was about to cry and everyone would be like, what is wrong with this girl? I'm just reading a really good comic here.
Yeah, it's amazing. The characters in the book are like, they're every man and every woman. They're totally relatable. The problems Eisner discusses are so universal to any human being. Highly recommended. Check out the Contract with God Trilogy.
Nice. I gotta check that out.
Yeah.
What am I reading? I'm reading the Culture novels.
Yeah, dude. They're good.
I'm on, which one is the one I'm on right now? So, Luke Barrage, actually, wrote a little thing on the forums of a specific order in which to read the novels. And it works out pretty well. I started off with Player of Games and then read the first one, which I believe is... something...
Consider Phlebius or Phlebius.
Yes.
Or consider this guy with a funny name.
Yeah, and then I read a few more. Right now I'm on one that doesn't actually involve the culture at all. It's a kind of medieval story of two kingdoms. But two people in each... Well, one person in each kingdom, I believe, is a culture agent.
Oh, man.
And, like,
that's cool.
How... the medieval society reacts to people who seem strange and have these weird ideas of, like, germs and, you know, modern technology.
Man, that's, like, that's cool. It's by Ian M. Banks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really want to read his treatment of that. That's such a common trope, like, someone from the future introduces crazy future ideas to a primitive civilization. He has another novel in the series, I think, that does that, but with the culture as compared to 1970s America.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've yet to read that one, but it also looks really good. I've been watching Mad Men. Mad Men's pretty good, but for those viewers interested in Mad Men, you should know that for those listeners interested in Mad Men, you should know that there are filler episodes and they feel a lot like filler.
Ooh.
Hmm.
Is this the latest season? I haven't caught up yet.
I don't know. I'm in like season 4. I use it mainly as background noise while I'm drawing.
Oh, gotcha.
Speaking of TV shows about people wearing suits in New York,
okay.
The Newsroom is the second season started. There's been 2 episodes out so far. It is just as fantastic as the first season.
Isn't the Newsroom a pretty old show?
No, it's not that old. Yeah, it's Aaron Sorkin's thing.
Yeah.
I like it.
Which also means that on a preachy scale of 0 to Aaron Sorkin, it's about Aaron Sorkin and a half. So.
Yeah, it is the full distillation of all that is Aaron Sorkin. Like, The West Wing is a great show, and it has its, you know, Sorkin bits. But imagine if you took The West Wing and just boiled it down for a few hours and added some cumin and maybe some paprika and just got this delicious, thick broth of Aaron Sorkin. That's the Newsroom.
Have you guys seen House of Cards?
House of Cards is also fantastic.
Delicious thick broth of Aaron Sorkin. Words I never want to fucking
that
hear.
That is going to be the episode title. I have decided.
We put some thick Aaron Sorkin on this podcast. You're gonna love
Aaron
it.
Aaron Sorkin. That's the episode title. It just popped back into my head. I've been watching. I'm a fan of old anime. And one of the old anime that I found in the shelves of Blockbuster as a kid was this old show called Cutie Honey. And it's got a really catchy theme song. It's been stuck in my head for maybe the last 10 years. It's been just sort of floating around my brain. And I'm finally getting around to watching this new animated version of it called R.E. Cutie Honey. And it is not for children, if you believe that Japanese animation is entirely either for children or entirely for adults. But it is a funny, cute show that it does have a fair amount of nudity in it, but it takes all of the ridiculousness of the old fighting shows like Power Rangers, the Super Sentai type shows, and adds in just ridiculous. All the police are like basically children sized and they're drawn really funny. But and when they get blown up, they go wee. But it's a really funny show. It's got maybe 3 episodes, each about 45 minutes long. So if you have time to watch a funny, you know, kind of throwaway show, you should watch it. The theme song is most badass.
Yeah, it does have the best incarnation of her theme song.
Yeah, it was the, I think it was Koda Akumi that made that version.
Yes.
It's got that killer bass line that.
But yeah, going on the anime topic, I've actually been mostly watching that. It's for me, it's anime season. What can I say?
Huh?
Genshiken Nadaime. There is a sequel manga to the original manga of Genshiken, and now they made an anime out of it.
Nice.
It just came out. 2-3 weeks ago, so I've been watching that. To tell the truth, my feelings on it is just kind of still weird because it changed a lot from the original incarnation, which was mostly otaku guys talking about otaku guy things and being awkward. Mm-hmm. Now it's otaku girls talking about yaoi, which and basically relates to me, yet it's kind of still hard to get into the characters. But one of the really good graces of it is that it still has a character who's also a guy who dresses as a girl who likes yaoi to be able to express her love of yaoi by also being a girl, and then goes through a lot of wonders about her gender identity throughout the series.
Interesting.
So there's that good part.
Nice.
Are there any holdovers from the previous Genshiken cast?
Yes. In fact, there's Ogwe.
I was hoping she'd be there.
Yeah, she's the president now.
Oh, and wow. She must be.
The crazy American goes to that school now.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes. And then there's still Madarame, who shows up now and again. And
what the
Saki
hell is Madarame doing?
And pretty much the rest of them makes cameos, but they don't show up as regularly.
Okay.
It's mostly about the new generation this time.
All right. So, anybody else have anything anyone have anything they want to plug or recommend or...
I have a bunch of stuff to plug.
All right, Vega, go for it.
All right. So, first off, I'm going to be at BronyCon doing the Brony vs. Brony game show and my little panel, Friendship is Magic, which is all about My Little Pony, and we're going to analyze it in the panel. Then after that, there's Otakon, where I have Beyond Pokemon, a panel of basically all the shows that's tried to be Pokemon and failed, or was trying to be Pokemon and succeeded but and better, but still Pokemon such a giant. A panel about Digimon, finally. Analyzing that. And a game show called the Yaoying Game, which you can guess exactly what that's about.
If you are a listener of Friday Night Party Line, and if you are a listener of Friday Night Party Line and are unfamiliar with the with yaoi, I both recommend and caution you to Google it. So,
and then
I recommend you do it with Safe Search off.
Yes. Oh boy.
Just GIS yaoi with Safe Search off, and you will understand.
You understand everything. The mysteries of the universe will be unveiled.
Oh, no!
Then afterwards, I'm selling my comics and stuff at Intervention and SPX this year. Hmm. I also do a web show called Vega Loves Comics, where I talk about comics.
It's good.
A most excellent web show.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, it is.
If I'm going to plug something, I guess you guys can follow me at my little Twitter handle that's in the bar down below. I draw comics and gig posters, so tweet at me, and I'll tell you stupid jokes.
What's your Twitter handle, David?
Yeah, this is a
it's
primarily audio show.
It's @DavidMang, in case you didn't. That's DavidMang. It's down in the corner.
Well, David, audio podcast.
Oh my god, it's an audio podcast. I keep forgetting, why do we even have video enabled? Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, my Twitter name, god damn it, is @David, DavidMang. David Mang. Nice and easy.
And I guess I'll plug my app.net handle, which is cooler because it's app.net instead of Twitter.
I do art on Twitter.
Yeah, it's @Keats. Like the poet.
Can we follow you in real life?
No, you can follow me with everything.
Send your drones.
Send your drones.
Come at me, bro. I'll fight you IRL.
I will shoot your drones out of the sky.
Hey guys, listeners, follow me with drones so I can get free drones.
Drones are the new social media.
I want drones to exist so I can be chased down the street by one.
Wow.
I feel like that's something I've always wanted to do. Escape by getting onto a subway train.
Like the next generation of Hitchcock's The Birds.
It's the cyberpunk future.
Cyberpunk future, your popularity.
They just get their drones to do it.
Your popularity depends on how many followers you have.
Brad Pitt just looks like a cloud of roving drones.
They're all following me on Twitter. And as such in real life, also.
We're predicting the future
here, guys.
You'll
just have a little feed in your Google Glass of whoever you're stalking with your drone at the time. I've been following Dave for about, like, 27 hours straight now. I'm going to tell the drone to go find Nelson. And then the drone will just hop the Hyperloop to New York.
Oh, man.
Oh, God, now I'm just imagining this adorable little quad-rotor drone, like, coming through and just popping out this little arm with, like, a Metro card on it. It's like, it just flies off.
No, RFID, it just lands.
I can't wait to telecommute to my friends.
RFID, it just sort of lands on the terminal and then takes back off. It just...
Oh, yeah, it just...
And then the graphite battery would get instantly charged while it was, you know, that brief moment it got sort of in contact with the thing.
It's spooky, dudes. Everything I've ever read about and thought, that's never going to happen, is starting
it's happening.
To happen.
Actually, to step back a section to the stuff you are reading, I was just recently reading a book called... I'm not actually just waving at my bookshelf for no reason, it's right there. But a book by an author called John Birmingham called Weapons of Choice. It's the first book in a trilogy. I've read through the trilogy. And it's basically Task Force from maybe 15, 20 years in the future or so gets into a big scientific accident where, you know, they're trying to do some sort of thing with black holes and nonsense, you know, duct tape, baling wire, all that shit. And they get thrown back in time to World War II with all of their high technology and everything else.
What is this called? I am reading this tonight.
Weapons of Choice by John Birmingham.
Weapons of Choice by John Birmingham. That's a trilogy. Three books. And basically, all sorts of different armies around the world get their hands on different segments of the technology, as well as part of the task force just appearing whole in the middle of the Pacific task force that America was sending to the Pacific right after Pearl Harbor.
That kind of reminds
really
me of Rome.
Good.
You want to talk about book series? Book series I'm reading, Honor Harrington. It is so awesome.
Isn't it just Horatio Hornblower?
Yes! Yes!
But I've already read Hornblower, AMC series when I was a little tiny baby.
You need to read this book series,
plus,
it's great.
The original Horatio Hornblower is better written than Honor Harrington.
Yeah, but
it's not well.
I am so really into this book series right now. I've been kind of reading them one after another.
It's cool. If you'd like it, you should. Have you seen Battlestar Galactica?
I haven't yet seen Battlestar Galactica.
It's
on my to-do list.
If you like space navies, go watch Battlestar Galactica. Yeah. It will scratch that itch, my friend.
Well, I'm worried because the season 3 ending, I'm told, is basically just God did it.
Pretty much, sort of. It's still a good show.
It's a good show.
It's also
watching.
If you are a gamer and also like Battlestar Galactica, specifically how the space navies work and how Vipers work and all that fun space combat stuff, Star Citizen is turning out to be more and more like that. Like,
yes.
I have been rewatching Battlestar over the last week or so, and I just see them doing their maneuvers in their Vipers, and I'm like, that's what I'm going to be doing. Cracking Cylons,
yes.
And going to see what's happening.
I'm all about that game. That game, Oculus Rift, me, joystick and throttle, it's just never see me again. I'll starve to death.
I've never heard of this game before, but I'm looking it up right now. Oh, wow, this looks right up my alley.
I don't want to do a whole segment on it, but basically Chris Roberts, who made Wing Commander.
Well, you know what?
Freelancer,
I got an idea. Nelson, I've got an idea. The next episode we're doing is going to be another QI-style episode. So after we're done So after we're done with the questions, we can do, like, each of us can do a nice little in-depth of a favorite thing. And
I am 110% in favor of this.
So you prep for that, and for listeners that are looking forward to it for next episode, stay tuned. You're going to get some awesome. Chirba, so you did your thingy. You're,
yes.
All right, so For me, all I have to plug is that, this pet project of mine called Sounds of the Commons, which you've heard me talk about a few months ago, probably March on the show. But for those of you who don't remember, Sounds of the Commons is a music podcast where I give you what I think are some of the best of Creative Commons licensed music that's available on the web for free for you to download. Pretty awesome music. This month, actually I think it was yesterday or the day before, I published the newest episode, episode 2. I've had some trouble getting stuff ready for it. But episode 2 has come out, and it is full of songs that are most excellent for summertime enjoyment. I highly recommend you go check it out. There'll be a link in the show notes to, I guess I can say this now, Friday Night Party Line's sister podcast. And you can go subscribe and get some awesome music. And, of course, in the show notes of all those episodes are places where you can get these episodes, those musics, for free to download. And you can stick them on your iPods or your Androids or your MP3 player of choice. So there's that, Sounds of the Commons. In fact, I may stick a little preview of that episode at the end of this one. But thank you guys so much for coming on to the show. It's been a fantastic episode. And just want to thank you all, Cherba, Nelson, David, Vega, thank you all for coming on to the show.
No problem.
Guten Tag.
It's fun.
All right. And we'll see you next month on Friday Night Party Line. Hey there, so now that the episode is over, like I said earlier in the show, I'm going to play for you a small preview of the newest episode of Sounds of the Commons, the first and, as far as I know, only Creative Commons-centric music podcast on the interwebs. What does that mean? Well, that means all the music is available for free for you to download legally. For more information on the podcast, check us out at soundsofthecommons.com. So I hope you enjoy. Hey there, welcome to Sounds of the Commons, where we curate some of the best Creative Commons licensed music, all for your listening pleasure. I'm your host, Victor Frost, and if the flowing waves and gulls overhead weren't enough, we're at the beach, because this episode is all about summer. Summer air, summer lives, summer love. And that's because, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, summer is upon us. And the songs on the show tonight, I think, would all be great additions to any summer playlist. With that said, let's get started. Before I moved to Los Angeles, I actually grew up in New England. This next song was recorded live at Scullers, a legendary jazz venue right on the side of the Charles River. The artist's name is Grace Kelly, and this next song is just such a summery tune, I just had to start out with it. So here it is. It's called Ready, Set, Stay.
Hit snooze, just 5 more minutes, please. You're such a sleepyhead, and that works for me, that works for me. Maybe we shouldn't sleep till noon, and we have things to do, but they can wait, let's let them wait. Under the covers, wait for me.
Wait for me.
Ready, set, stay. Ready, set, don't go away.
Ready, set,
stay forever. Stay, stay, stay. Ready, set, stay. Ready, set, love me all day. Stay forever. Stay, stay, stay. Let's stay under these cotton waves. work and say you won't go today, ain't no way. Download our favorite TV shows, rubbing nose and nose till the sun goes down again. Under the covers, wait for me.
Wait for me.
Ready, set, stay. Ready, set, don't go away. Ready, set, stay forever. Stay, stay, stay. Ready, set, stay. Ready, set, love me all day. Stay forever. Stay, stay. I'll be so warm here in your arms. So take a snapshot before life gets us back in the race. Ready, set, stay. Ready, set, don't go away. Ready, set, stay forever. Stay, stay, stay. Ready, set, stay. Ready, set, love me all day. Stay forever. Stay, stay, stay. Stay forever. Stay, stay, stay. Stay forever. Stay, stay, stay.
Thanks so much.